Welcome to the IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I'm Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director of the IASB. And in this episode, I am joined by Linda Mizan-Hutter, Vice Chair of the IASB, and Bruce McKenzie, one of our board members. So in this podcast, we will discuss the board's October meeting, where the board covered seven projects. In this episode, we will discuss our project on financial instruments with characteristics of equity, which we affectionately call FICE. We'll discuss our project on business combinations, disclosures, goodwill, and impairment. Excuse me, and that one has a bit of an acronym called BCDGI. And then we'll also cover intangible assets and power purchase agreements. So let's start with FICE. This project aims to clarify the often blurry lines between financial liabilities and equity on a company's balance sheet. The main area we have been looking at is financial instruments that have characteristics of both debt and equity. And our goal with this project is to clarify how companies classify these hybrid instruments. By providing clearer requirements, we want to help investors and other users of financial statements get a more accurate picture of a company's financial position, risks, and opportunities. So, Linda, can you start us off by reminding us about where we are with this project and what happened at the October board meeting?
You might recall that the IASB issued an exposure draft back in November of 2023, proposing changes to how companies should classify financial instruments as either liabilities or equity, as well as changes to presentation and disclosures. Since the comment period closed in March of 2024, we've been carefully considering all of the feedback we've received, and we thank you for that feedback. At the October board meeting, the board wasn't asked to make any decisions. This discussion focused specifically on feedback from our stakeholders related to two topics in the exposure draft. The first was the proposed presentation of equity instruments within financial statements, ensuring the presentation is clear and informative. And the second area was the proposed disclosure requirements, so what information companies should disclose about financial instruments to help investors make informed decisions. Now, I think we need to admit that the stakeholder feedback on the proposed presentation and disclosure requirements was generally quite mixed. So the users of financial statements largely supported the proposed presentation and disclosure requirements, emphasizing their need for clearer information about an entity's financial instruments. Now, on the other side of the fence, preparers, while acknowledging the need for improved disclosures, expressed concerns about the volume of the disclosures and the complexity and the operational challenges in preparing the information. Now, one of the things the board's considering, given the level of user support for these proposals, is to fast-track finalization of these proposals separate from the other proposals in the FICE exposure draft. So the staff will use the input received from the IASB in October to identify potential alternatives to respond to the feedback from stakeholders before bringing this back to the board for further discussion. And we'll also determine the appropriate time to discuss the proposals with our consultative groups.
Great. Thanks, Linda. So more to come. So let's move into our next project, business combinations, disclosures, goodwill, and impairment. I think everyone's well aware that business combinations are often significant events in the life of a company, and investors need clear and transparent information to assess their potential impact. However, feedback from our stakeholders has highlighted that the current information provided about business combinations isn't always as useful as it could be. So this is where our project comes in. The focus is to improve disclosures that companies make when they acquire other businesses. So Bruce, can you tell us how this project would help investors make better decisions?
So, I mean, our aim is to help investors better understand the strategic rationale behind these acquisitions, how the acquired business is performing, and ultimately, whether the acquirer's management is effective in using its resources. Now, to achieve this, the IASB issued an exposure draft in March 2024, proposing amendments to two key standards. Firstly, adding disclosure requirements about business combinations to IFRS 3 on business combinations. And secondly, updating IAS 36 impairment of assets, mostly to clarify or simplify existing requirements. Now, the comment period for the exposure draft closed in July 2024, and we've been busy analysing the feedback from the stakeholders. Now, the October IASB meeting provided an opportunity for the board to get an overview of the feedback received on the exposure draft. And we discussed initial stakeholder reactions to several key proposals, including disclosure of information about a business combination's performance. In other words, giving investors insight into whether the acquisition is meeting its objectives, disclosure of expected synergies. Now, this is about providing more transparency on the expected benefits of combining two businesses, and clarifications on the allocation of goodwill to cash-generating units. Now, this area is important for understanding how impairment is being assessed. The October meeting was very much a high level, and the ISB didn't make any decisions on the proposed BCDGI amendments at this stage.
Thanks, Bruce. What we're hearing from different stakeholders is actually quite diverse. Linda, can you give us a little bit more color on that?
Overall, there were divergent views, particularly between, I'm surprised, preparers and users on the main proposed amendments to IFRS 3. So here's our key takeaways. Almost all users agreed with the proposal to require an entity to disclose information about the performance of a business combinations, and many users agreed with the proposal to require an entity to disclose quantitative information about expected synergies. Users confirm the need for this information and say the information would help users assess management's decision to acquire the businesses. Many preparers also acknowledge users' need for better information about business combinations and steps taken by the IASB to better balance users' need for this information with preparers' concerns. However, most preparers continue to disagree with requiring this information to be disclosed within the financial statements. In addition, some regulators support requiring the proposed disclosures. However, feedback from auditors highlights concerns about a possible expectations gap that could arise as a consequence of requiring these disclosures within the financial statements. Now, the staff is planning to present detailed feedback summaries on the proposed amendments to IFRS 3 and IAS 36 at our future meetings, I would say likely in December 2024 or in January 2025. And then we'll also be considering relevant academic research on these topics, ensuring that our final decisions are based on a robust understanding of both stakeholder views and the latest research available to us.
Thanks, Linda. And thank you to our stakeholders for taking the time to respond to our exposure draft and participating in our outreach meetings. So let's move on to intangible assets. As everyone's well aware, in today's rapidly evolving landscape, intangible assets like brands, technology, customer relationships, and intellectual property are often the key drivers of a company's value. Our current standard for intangible assets, IAS 38, was developed more than 20 years ago, and so it may not be fully capturing the nuances of these valuable intangible assets. So in our third agenda consultation, we heard from stakeholders that this topic is quite important. And as a result, it was added to the IASB's pipeline to start sometime during this agenda consultation period. In April, we started the project, and the objective is to thoroughly review IAS 38 and determine how to ensure that financial statements provide investors with the most relevant information about a company's intangibles. Since then, our initial focus has been on reaching out to advisory bodies and stakeholders to gather their perspectives on the project's objective, scope, and the best approach for tackling this complex area. In October, the board discussed initial feedback that we've received from stakeholders. Bruce, can you share some of the key messages we've heard?
So we've started to identify some themes in the feedback on the problem we should be looking at. And many stakeholders have told us that IAS 38 is outdated and struggling to keep up with new intangible assets like cryptocurrencies or new ways of accessing them, for example, cloud computing. We've also heard that financial statements do not provide sufficient information about intangible assets or expenses on intangible items. Now, this makes it difficult for investors to understand how intangible assets contribute to future cash flows and value creation. Now, when it comes to what we need to tackle first, we've heard a variety of views, but we have some front runners. Better disclosure about intangible assets emerged as one of the priority requests. For example, users of financial statements are often calling for more detailed information about a company's intangible assets, even those not currently recognized on the balance sheet. Now, there's also reasonable interest in exploring the specific application issues related to newer intangible assets, reviewing the definition and recognition criteria for intangible assets, and looking at improving comparisons between internally generated and acquired intangible assets. Now, as for the approach to the project, stakeholders expressed differing views. Most preferred focusing on the priority topics only or completing the project in phases, tackling aspects in IAS 38, for example, disclosures or practical application challenges first, to allow for more manageable progress. But some lean towards a more comprehensive review to ensure consistency and avoid piecemeal changes. Now, the feedback presented at the meeting painted a rich picture of stakeholder views, highlighting the diverse perspectives on the challenges in accounting for intangible assets. We received a lot of mixed views on the problem, what the problem is and how it could be solved. The ISB has not been asked to make any decisions at this stage, as this was an opportunity for the board to really absorb the initial feedback. Now, throughout the remainder of the year, we'll continue actively engaging with stakeholders to gather further feedback, particularly on the scope of the project and the prioritization of the topics. We'll also be conducting a survey to gather more structured input, with a particular focus on hearing from users of financial statements, in other words, those who rely on this information to make investment decisions. Now, we plan to launch a survey soon, so stay tuned. In the first half of 2025, the staff will first present an updated summary of feedback and other research findings, and then the analysis of the feedback and findings. Following that, the board will be asked to make some key decisions about the project, determine its scope, objectives, and work plan.
Thank you, Bruce. So more to come. Let's move on to power purchase agreements. Now, for a quick update, we refer to this as contracts referencing nature-dependent electricity, although the project originated with the name of power purchase agreements, but we're effectively talking about the same thing. Now, as many of our listeners know, these agreements are becoming increasingly important as companies transition to renewable energy sources. We issued an exposure draft in May proposing amendments to IFRS 9 and IFRS 7. Following a shortened comment period, which ended in August, the board convened in September and then October to discuss and make decisions based on the feedback received. At its September meeting, the ISB made tentative decisions about the scope of the amendments and the own use amendments. Linda, can you update us on what happened in October?
Absolutely. The October discussions on this project focused on potential refinements to the proposed hedge accounting requirements and also disclosure requirements. The board also discussed the proposed transition requirements for companies adopting the new guidance. The staff recommend the ISB requires an effective date of January 1, 2026, with early application permitted from the date of initial application. The board agreed with the staff's proposals and recommendations, subject to a few refinements to the proposed disclosure requirements. Our goal now is to finalize these amendments by the end of 2024, so please stay tuned to this important project.
Thanks, Linda. I think it's really quite exciting. It's been a journey with this project. It's moved very quickly, and it's been quite challenging to really get to the root of the issues and understand how we can deal with them. But as Linda mentioned, we're hitting a milestone very soon, so stay tuned for that. And I wanted to also just mention a couple other milestones that we've hit in October. The first relates to our project on dynamic risk management, which is designed to provide financial statement users with a clearer understanding of how companies manage interest rate risk. Now, in October, the board concluded its technical deliberations. And this is a huge milestone because this project has been quite challenging and has involved quite a bit of deliberation and outreach and research over a long time. But the plan is to publish an exposure draft towards the end of half one 2025. Now, the comment period for this exposure draft will most likely be 240 days to facilitate consultation with a diverse range of stakeholders. Linda, can you explain the length of this comment period? It's a little bit unusual. If you think about most of our exposure drafts have a comment period of 120 days, but this one's twice that.
Yes, I know. And I think that's important for us to just give a soundbite on. So thanks for bringing that up, Neely. The 240-day comment period would allow stakeholders sufficient time to assess whether the proposed requirements of the DRM model, which is very new and very innovative, are better reflecting the effects of their risk management strategies and activities in their financial statements. And as well, a 240-day comment period would allow entities sufficient time to conduct fieldwork across a reporting period for most entities, regardless of when their annual reporting period ends. We're well aware that when we issue a major pronouncement like this, that it's hard to find the perfect time because some companies have December 31st year ends, other companies have March 31st year ends, yet other companies have June 30th year ends. So we thought about that in making sure we set a long comment period.
Thanks, Linda. And the other milestone that I wanted to highlight for our listeners relates to our taxonomy, our proposed taxonomy update on our recently issued standard IFRS 18, Presentation and Disclosure in Financial Statements. And the reason this is such a milestone is that this is the first time that we engaged in taxonomy fieldwork for a proposed taxonomy update. It has been an enormously enlightening experience, and we really appreciate all of the comment letters and the fieldwork participants who gave us such rich information about their experiences in applying the proposals. The board discussed the feedback at the meeting in October and plans to make decisions at a future meeting. So with that, we will say goodbye. Thank you for listening to our October 2024 IASB podcast, and we look forward to bringing you further updates on these important projects in the future. Thank you.